You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the Podcast Network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, February 9th, 2011. This is episode 170, The Proclaimer. Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of the Wells Tech Podcast. My name is Martin Spriggs, and I work for the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod, as does my podcasting partner, Sally Draper from Sleepy Eye, Minnesota. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. How are you this morning?
I'm excellent. How are you?
I'm good. I'm guessing you're bleeding some green and gold over there.
Well, I'm not a huge Packer fan myself, but all those around me certainly are. I mean, I was certainly rooting for the Packers because it's always better around here if the Packers win than lose. So it was fun. I watched the game and I thought that they might win. So it was a good thing.
Yeah, it was all good except that third quarter. I was a little nervous. Then.
But you're not necessarily a big Packer fan, are you?
No, but just by association, like you.
Okay. So. And Kevin is from? Is he from? He's not from Wisconsin either, is he?
Nope, he's a Michigander.
Okay. Not much to root for there in the pro football world.
No, I had my big glory year last year, and I can live with the Saints winning once in my lifetime. That was more than I ever dreamed of.
So. And I'm kind of still basking in the Giants winning the World Series, too. So
there you go.
Anyway, no, things are good here. We've shoveled out, and hopefully the groundhog is right, and we have just a few more weeks of winter.
Yeah.
Anyway, we are back to chapter 6 of the book that we've, for those of you new to the show, we pick a book and we essentially read it together, and we encourage our listeners to follow along as well. We try and pick books that are relevant, and the book that we're currently reading, Leading 21st Century Schools, has great application for our schools, especially those interested in figuring out how to use this technology thing, you know, within their curriculum. Within basically every corner of the educational space, and we're way up to chapter 6, and this is kind of a even though it's chapter 6 and they've had 5 other chapters, this is kind of a foundational chapter because they begin to really emphasize the fact that this needs to be a culture, you know, within the school. It kind of has to be in the fabric of what you do, rather than just an add-on or a bolt-on, similar, you know, the way I kind of envision it or relate it to my own experiences is when a school believes that just setting up a computer lab and maintaining a computer lab and maybe having just some computer training classes for the kids, that's not embedded in the culture, you know, of the school. That's just putting technology in there because, yeah, we need to do that. Versus, how are we going to invest and push this into the learning experience?
And yeah, I think another thing to think about is maybe as leaders in our schools, we're buying into this technology thing. We understand the need for integrating it throughout all of the coursework, but we don't want to offend or put off our non-techie friends who we are also our coworkers, mm-hmm. and just drag them kicking and screaming into this technology age. It's how to lead, how to inspire, how to motivate that change within your school to where you become seamless technology schools so that right. it's used throughout the curriculum. Yep. And I think that kicking and screaming is what a lot of people are digging in for these days. You know, they're just afraid of where this might take them and that they don't have the skills necessary to to really effectively do these kind of things in their classroom. And so you as leaders in that technology realm need to inspire that.
Yeah, and that's, I think that's a great perspective. I think there is a fear that they're not quite sure what to do with this technology thing. And that's a point that's made in the book, too. And I'm just pulling out a little call out on page 109 that says, before teachers begin designing instruction, it is important they become comfortable with using the technology for their own professional activities. So I think what you're saying, and I agree with this, is that some of the fear that teachers have probably comes from the unknown, that they haven't dabbled with this or haven't invested their own time in using technology for their own purposes, their own either social, personal, or professional purposes. So, boy, it's a great leap from there to try and now use it in front of a classroom full of kids effectively when the kids probably have more experience than they do.
Yeah, you know, I can totally relate to a class I'm teaching, a little short one-hour class I'm teaching for MLC right now on web page design, and some great people in that class, but they're just really intimidated to push the buttons. And so that was my main goal, was just do it. Just do it for yourself. Create a blog. It's free. It's easy. Try it out. Push the buttons. See what happens. So their comfort level and their confidence is built in that process.
Yep. You can't break the internet, they say.
I can try, though.
That's right. And some of us come close. But it is really hard. Usually there's an undo button. So yeah. Then as we move kind of through the chapter, the authors make a distinction between what they call type 1 activities and type 2 activities. So I'm on page 110, if you're following along at home, bottom of the page. Some educators divide the use of educational technology within the curriculum into two types of activities. Type 1 activities utilize technology tools for productivity purposes. So I think that's the more traditional, you know, we're going to use word processing, or we're going to learn how to do a web search, those kinds of things. The other way of using these tools, they call type 2, are designed to change the nature of teaching and learning. Type 2 activities facilitate collaboration among students and promote dynamic interaction with the breadth of human knowledge. And I think those type 2 activities are closer to those conversations that we've had with Gail Potritz in the past, where she is looking for ways, and others like her are looking for ways to use technology to take the students to kind of the next level, you know, to use group learning experiences and collaboration and use the internet and kind of the social tools that are available there for educational purposes.
Yeah, I think of my recent visit to the Mall of America and seeking out the map to find out where I was. You are here. And we are at type 1 for the most part. If you or take an honest assessment of where we are in our schools today. But ultimately, I think the goal is, just like you said, that dynamic interaction, that collaboration. I have actually a neat story to share, a real-life application of this. This week, our grade 3 and 4 teacher came to me and said, Sally, you would be so proud of the kids, because we had a project. We were brainstorming Bible promises. And I just said, you know, give me some ideas. What are some of those promises that you know of in the Bible? And they were able to come up with verses, and they went to Bible Gateway all on their own. They said, bring up Bible Gateway. Let's do some searching there. Searched on phrases, found these verses, copy and pasted them into a word processing document. And this is actually the kids leading this technology integration. This wasn't the teacher's plan necessarily, but that the kids are doing this collaboration and you know, really using technology to benefit their Christ-like lesson that they were working on. Mm-hmm. So that was really encouraging.
Cool.
Yeah.
And then moving through and this is a really short chapter, but I think kind of a powerful one. The last point that the authors make is that section entitled, A Technology-Rich Lesson, Will We Know It If We See It? And that's probably a challenge if you aren't familiar with using technology or incorporating technology into the regular learning process. you're never quite sure if you've arrived, if you're trying it. And the book outlines a number of things to take a look at, some categories, some considerations for evaluating a technology-enhanced lesson. And this kind of goes back to finding that technology coordinator, perhaps, too, in your school who can help you, or who can assist with that, or who can maybe observe or make suggestions. But there are great categories here, beginning, of course, with standards and objectives, and we've talked about those in the past. The general purpose of the technology used, the learning activities, preparation, strategy, and finally assessment. It kind of gives you a step-by-step. These are the things to look at to really know if the technology that you use has enhanced the lesson, or sometimes the danger, I suppose, is to pick a technology and hope that it provides some value to the educational experience. So it's obviously got to be a little bit more strategic than that.
So as school leaders, in the implementation of a technology plan, you actually have to assess whether or not it's working.
Right.
And this is That's definitely hard. Some practical things that you can look for as a leader if you're observing a classroom lesson and they're using technology in that lesson. So I know Gail had built into her technology plan that she shared in the past that, you know, there was assessment. You needed to have a lesson that we could come in and actually see you demonstrate these skills in the course of that lesson. And this is a great list to use for that assessment process.
Mm-hmm. The more, Sally, the more I read this book, the more it strikes me that with the infusion of technology into the academic space, you're almost having to relearn how to teach, you know, more so than maybe any other time, that you've got to figure this stuff out, because this was never a part of the curriculum at Martin Luther College, or previously Dr. Martin Luther College, certainly to the degree that it is now, even 5-6 years ago, because things like Facebook didn't exist, and kind of the social nature of these things and the online tools that are available, and Google Docs didn't exist, you know, those kinds of things. So it's a brand new world out there, and I can recognize that there is some, it's a stretch to not only have to teach a class, but also have to maybe learn how to teach again in some certain respects.
And, you know, that actually speaks to Martin Luther College looking at those needs and addressing those with some of the new programs they have. They have a certificate in educational technology, and they have a master's program that you can focus on educational technology as well. So if that is a need that our listeners have, then our school is responding in that way.
Yep. Yep, absolutely.
So, one more quick plug, Martin, that our Wells Tech Wiki has some sample school technology plans posted. Mm-hmm. So, if you're looking to set up a plan for your school, that might be a good starting point to look at some of those samples.
Absolutely. Very good. Let's move on to the interview that we have this week, Sally. And it's missionary Mike Hartman. Those of you that are longtime listeners may remember that we talked to Pastor Hartman a while back. I don't exactly remember which show it was, but it was a while ago. And we asked him to come back on based on a blog post that I read, or that we read on Wells.net, about that Rachel wrote, and she's kind of the blogger, you know, of the family on behalf of the mission there in Mexico, about a tool or a little device that they're using called the Proclaimer. So without further ado, let's listen to our conversation with Mike Hartman about their use of the Proclaimer. Joining us today on the Wells Tech Podcast, again, is Pastor Mike Hartman from beautiful Mexico. And Mike, you are the field coordinator for Wells Missions Mission Work in Mexico, correct?
That is correct.
Well, welcome back to the show, and I'm glad you took some time. Maybe just for those who don't know you, maybe a brief introduction about who you are, what you do, a little bit about your family would be great.
Well, I'm, like you said, I'm the field coordinator, missionary to Mexico. We've been living down here since this is about 1999, mm-hmm. and Rachel and I have two little girls. Trinity and Noel, and we live in the center of the country, León. It's a nice city. It's about the size of the Minneapolis area, and it's the fifth largest city in Mexico. We just moved here last year, and we're working to start up some new churches here in León. It's a city about 450 years old, but there have never really been any Lutheran churches that have come to this part of the country. Okay. So it's a neat opportunity.
Yeah, as our Wells Connection viewers probably saw or will see, you moved south from Torreón for safety reasons, I suppose, would be the best way to characterize it.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Torreón has the drug war that's been affecting Mexico has come to Torreón and is really affecting that city. So we thought it was not wise for us to continue there. And that said, it's been really neat to see how even after we've left, the church there has actually been growing. Their church attendance has increased by, from average weekly attendance was around 100, and now they're getting about 130 on a Sunday. So
wonderful.
It's really neat to see that.
Wonderful. But plenty of souls to save in León, I'm sure, too, right?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Very many.
Well, we wanted to talk to you about some technology that you're using, and it kind of came to our attention from a blog post that your wife Rachel posted a number of weeks ago, where she was talking about the use of something called the Proclaimer in the Mexican mission field that you're in. Can you, first of all, maybe explain a little bit to our listeners about what the Proclaimer is?
Well, I kind of say the Proclaimer is sort of like an all-terrain Bible.
It's, I like that.
It's a digital Bible, electronic Bible, but it's you can plug it in, you can use it with batteries, it has a solar panel on it, and you can crank it to get it to work. And it's available in all different types of languages, and it has the speaker volume on it is really good. You can use it with you're just in a small group or want to listen to it yourself, or you can reach up to, they say, up to 300 people with the device. So it's just been really a really neat device. We began using it in parts of Mexico, and we're looking to obtain more here too.
I'm having visions of MacGyver or Indiana Jones with an MP3 player here. So take it anywhere and use it with all different kinds of power sources. That's pretty cool stuff. So can you tell us a little bit of the stories around your usage there in Mexico?
Well, right now, the main person that is using it in Mexico is one of our Mexican pastors, Carlos Rosales. He lives up north in northwestern Mexico, just south of the Arizona border. And he has, I believe they have about a half dozen of these devices up there. But he serves a congregation there in a real small town, about 20,000 people, I think, in that town. And then he also serves a number of preaching stations that are scattered in that area. And some of these villages can be difficult to get into right now. I mentioned that they... with some of the troubles going on in the country, well, this is one of the areas that's being affected by that. And so they can't always get in there so easily. But you can take this device in. We've left it in a few places so that people there can gather and listen to the Bible on a regular basis. Pastor Carlos has used it. He uses it in a number of different settings. He'll use it when he goes along when he goes to a Bible class and such, he might go into someone's home and he'll take it with him. A lot of people that he works with, most people in Mexico, you'd say they're officially able to read, they're literate, but they're what you'd call functionally illiterate, where they don't really read and they're not accustomed to reading. And so using this Bible and being able to listen to the Bible rather than reading it it's really useful for people that aren't accustomed to read. They might be more used to listening to the Bible, and it helps make the Bible class go a little more smoothly, And people really have been had a positive have reacted positively to it. He also uses it when he goes into some of these villages and such. Will gather people. Sometimes I've had the chance to lead Bible classes in those villages, and sometimes you're basically gathering under a tree and meeting with people outdoors. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I've even given a couple of PowerPoint presentations where I've set up a screen outside and shot up, you know, outside to a bunch of people gathered underneath a tree. And it's this thing has a strong enough volume that you can listen to it. And he says you can crank it for about 15 minutes and then listen to it for about an hour without having to crank it. So it's it's real useful that way.
Get some exercise in the process. 15 minutes of cranking. I'm guessing that, you know, in America, I know we all like our shiny, bright things and our bells and whistles. Technology tends to attract people these days. And I'm guessing it probably has the same effect there. Just the novelty of the technology may be serving God's kingdom and spreading the word just because of the coolness of the technology. Is that the case?
Yeah, I would say that it's an attractive thing that they've done a good job, in my opinion, in putting on in recording the Bible. They call it a dramatized Bible reading, and so but they haven't gone over the top, but it's listenable. And that's really good. And the device, one of the good things about this device is that while it's high tech, it's really only good for one thing. It's a Bible. And in many ways, that's actually good because it means that you know that it's being used for what you want it to be used for. You know, you can get all kinds of digital Bibles and you can put it on an MP3 player and such. And you give the person the MP3 player, but that can be a temptation when an MP3 player, which in the States, you know, might not be much, you know, you can get a nice one for, you know, $70 or something like that. But for people in lower income settings, that can be a temptation to sell it or use it for something that it wasn't intended for. And the Proclaimer, they put the chip right into the device, and so it's only useful for what you want it to be used for. And so it's a good technology device, but you know that it's being used for what you want it to be used for.
Mike, how did you come across the device? How were you made aware of it, and how much does it cost?
Well, we came across it. Actually, two people told me about it. There's a member of one of our churches in Tucson who actually, he was the one who obtained these devices initially for the work that's going on across the border in the Sonora area. And then also my dad, Paul Hartman, they've obtained some. I think they had got a hold of about six of them that they're using in Nepal. And they're using them in the foothills of the Himalayas out there. There are about 100 little churches, and they're sharing them between those churches. So that's where I heard about the device. And you can, if you go to their website, it's faithcomesbyhearing.com, you can find a device there, and there's a phone number. And you call that phone number, and you can actually get four of them for free as long as you can show that they are going to be used on a weekly basis to share God's word with a group of people. And then if you want more, you can buy them. I haven't found the cost on the website, but if you call that number, they'll tell you the process to purchase them. They cost about $100. And so for $100, you can buy it and you can do whatever you want with it.
And they have multiple languages, like you mentioned, Nepal. They have a lot of different languages that you can get the chip that's embedded in them in a variety of languages so that you can use them in different mission settings. Or I suppose they have English as well, and maybe there's an application for spreading the word via these devices in America as well.
Yeah, they do have a lot of language. In fact, we're trying right now, we're trying to get a hold of a few that would be in some Mexican indigenous languages. About 6 million people in Mexico don't speak Spanish as their native language, and so we're trying to get a few that would be in other languages like that. And they do have quite a few languages that they're available in.
Well, while we're talking about websites, you mentioned the faithcomesbyhearing.com. We'd be remiss if we didn't mention a couple that are related to the mission work there in Mexico more directly. And one is where the blog post we came across is on the missions.wells.net site, which is a conglomeration mission blog site where we can read about mission work from all around the world. And if our listeners haven't visited there, you certainly would benefit from doing that. And your wife, Rachel, writes regularly for that website. And she also maintains a website specifically focused on your mission work there in Mexico. Maybe you could give us just a quick blurb about what goes on that website and what the web address is.
Sure. Yeah, we have the website we use is Lutheransinmexico.com. And the idea behind that is that it's to be a 21st century missionary letter home. You know, back in the day, missionaries would write the letter and they'd mail it and they'd send it to someone back in the States, and then that person would copy it and send it all over the place. Well, today this is our way of trying to stay in touch with people back in the States and let them know what's going on. And so Rachel's goal is always to update that blog about twice a week, and it's anything from we just recently had a graduation in our seminary, or this last week we had a number of people from the administration, Wells administration, come down to help us further develop a short-term volunteer project. So it's things like that, work-related things too. She puts up recipes, Mexican recipes, and other daily life things. So it's just a neat way to kind of stay in touch with mission work and get a taste of what it's like to be a missionary family.
It's a safe way to get a taste, because sometimes those things you guys are eating are a little bit scary. You're kind of known for that, aren't you, Missionary Hartman?
Oh yeah, Rachel says that I can eat anything with a smile on my face. So.
Very good. Well, we'll keep reading and see what's next.
Thank you, Mike, and certainly give our best to Rachel and the girls, and we'll look forward to speaking with you again. Blessings on your work there. Your new home sounds like things are going really well.
Well, thank you, and we appreciate what you're doing as well. We enjoy listening to your podcast.
Keep listening, and we'll stay in touch. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
Thank you again, Mike, for taking that time once again, and certainly continued blessings on your work there in Mexico. Sally, I'm kind of excited about these devices because they really seem to be having an impact for those people that get to take advantage of that.
Yeah, I love the techiness tied to the reliability of being able to crank it to power mm-hmm. it if you need to. I mean, that
makes a lot of sense.
You can't get any better than that. That's right. Cool stuff.
Yeah, technology is extending its reach through its own technology advances. So very nice, and it's great to hear, so to speak, that word of God is being listened to even in the remotest locations.
Yep.
Let's move on to ministry resources, and we've got a bunch of them today, Sally.
Yeah, lucky us. Lots of sharing going on. Last week, we actually kind of put out a call to our listeners and to the Wells Tech listserv for links to online giving resources. You can certainly collect online donations using PayPal, real basic service.
Mm-hmm. But there are others. And that's what you do, right?
That is true. That's what we do here in Sleepy Eye. But there are other services out there that are geared specifically for charitable donations, congregational type giving. And we wanted to share some of the links that we received. We heard from a couple of high schools, actually.
Right.
James Monkey at Luther High School in Onalaska, Wisconsin, sent us a link. They use a site called justgive.org. Mm-hmm. And he says they have no monthly fees, and 3% of each donation is taken for the administration registration fees on the donations. So they have been happy with it. They get a check once a month for any of those donations, and we'll put a link to that in the show notes. We also heard from Joshua Johnson, who's at Nebraska Lutheran High School, and I really liked what he had to say. He sent us a link to their page where they take online donations. It's through a service called Vanco, which is powered by e-services. And we'll have links for all of that in the show notes. But here's what Joshua had to say. He said, it's been nice that it's really run by the bank and people can choose from a variety of payment methods. He says, we use this not only as a way for people to make online gifts, but it also comes in handy in our dorm setting when someone wants to pay for something via credit card. Students sometimes purchase hot lunch tickets or athletic attire from the school, and then they have the ability for mom or dad to pay online. So it's really important if you do go with something like that, he says, where you're going to accept payments for multiple things from a variety of areas, that there be a way for the statement of deposits to show what the payments were for.
Right.
And the service has done that for them. So we thank you both for sending in those links. Martin, you had found a couple of others that do similar things.
Two of the ones that I'm most familiar with, and I can't say that I have firsthand experience with either one, but I've heard good things about both. One is called Easy Tithe. And this is more for the congregational giver. That's easytithe.com. And the other one that I've actually tested a few times is called ministrygive.com. And they have all kinds of services, but they all kind of work the same way. They all have a charge, a credit card charge, what they call a discount rate. Some of them have transaction fees on top of that. Others do not. Others have nice little embed code that you can put right on your website. But most of them basically get the job done, and those are the two that I've heard recommended the most at this point.
So lots of options there. We'll have links for all of that in ministry resources.
And thanks to Joshua and Jim for sharing their ideas, too. That's helpful.
Yeah. It's great to know that it's working for you guys.
Mm-hmm.
Next up in ministry resources, we heard from Exatweet. That would be Pastor Aaron Fry on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And he shared a link, a kind of exciting news, actually, for Logos users. Logos is now publishing the Wisconsin Lutheran Quarterly from 1990 through 2010.
Yep.
So 84 issues of the Wisconsin Lutheran Quarterly are now available in Logos format, so they can incorporate and be part of all the searches and things that you do with your Logos software.
Yep.
And we have a link for that for the show notes.
Yep, that's a wealth of information there. Those are some of those can be very they are all scholarly, but some of them very lengthy and helpful in sermon prep or in Bible study prep. Lots of things that a pastor would find useful. Most, if not all, pastors do subscribe to it, but now that it's in an electronic format that is easily indexed and searchable, I wonder if it even cross references verses. So I would think it would. Maybe Exatweet can give us feedback on that. I should have tried it. That will allow you to look up a verse, and it'll also show Wisconsin Lutheran Quarterly articles based on that verse or referenced in it. I bet it does. Should be really helpful.
Yeah, I'm seeing some really strange pricing, and it actually says pre-order, so I'm not sure if it's available yet. But it says it's only $37.95. It says retail price $462, save $424. I'm not quite sure if the pricing is right or not, but
that's a sale.
Yeah, that's a big sale. Yeah,
if my wife were to come home and say, "Honey, I bought a $400 dress for $40," I'd be impressed by that.
That'd be a good day at your house.
That's right.
All right. Well, check it out. And last up in ministry resources, Martin, you had a link to creationswap.com.
Yep. Yeah, I've mentioned this in the past. It's by Collide Magazine, which, by the way, is no longer in print. I've recommended this in the past. It's only online, I think, at this point. But they launched a site called Creation Swap, which essentially, and I'll just read right off the website, it's a site we first told you about a while back, but free church graphic design photos, logos, and other things shared by Christian artists worldwide. You can post your own stuff. You can buy stuff. A lot of it's free. Some of it's great for print stuff, just a great resource for imagery and ideas, and a nicely laid out site as well. So you may want to check out Creation Swap.
And I did a little digging to look at their license agreement, and it's pretty straightforward. You can use it in a lot of different ways. You can't resell it or print it on things that you're going to sell, like a t-shirt or something you're going to sell at Cafe Press. But other than that, you can use it in print materials and on the web for non-commercial purposes without any problems. So that's a wonderful resource.
And these are high quality, too. They've done some curating here, so they highlight the good stuff, and it's in nice format too. I'm just looking at a couple images here, nice and large. You could use these for print or for online. Just some nicely done stuff and nicely organized on the site.
Okay.
Is that it for ministry resources?
I think that'll do it for this week.
Okay, then let's go to yours and my favorite section called Picks of the Week. Sally, what's your pick this week?
Well, I'm going to point people to a blog post this week. It's called Compelling Facebook Fan Pages. It's by Chris Brogan, who writes about all kinds of social media type topics. But I really like this blog post because it has a lot of examples of what you could do with your Facebook fan page. Now, all of these are mostly commercial examples, not religious oriented or whatever, but it does give you a lot of good ideas for how your Facebook fan page could look. And Martin, in the past, we've talked about the ability to use the Facebook markup language and create your own fan page. We actually have one. It's not a stellar one, but we have one for the Wells Tech podcast. And this would be a page that people would land on if they used your Facebook address, like facebook.com/WellsTech, and they're not already liking your Facebook fan page. They're just kind of visiting the page for the first time. It's we might call it a splash page or a starter page. And you can do a lot with that page. You can add all kinds of graphical elements.
Yep.
And this blog post has a lot of great examples of that. So I'm going to include a link in the show notes to some past resources that we've published about creating Facebook fan pages, but I just challenge our listeners to look through the pages that are in Chris's blog post and maybe consider creating a splash page or a starter page for your Facebook page and sending us a link to it. We'd like to learn from each other, and we'd like to have some compelling Facebook fan pages as well for our congregations and schools.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised when I read through this article that how easy it is or how flexible it can be. You can really make your Facebook page look any way you want, and rather than just the wall, the feed, the news feed kind of things, you can use imagery and get really creative with that. I think there's some good ideas here for the industrious who would like to spruce up their church pages.
Lots of potential there. And how many users on Facebook these days, Martin? Is it something like 500 million
or
something?
Half a billion, yep, or more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you're reaching out to the world with this page, and you probably want to make it the best it can be.
Yep. My pick, and this is a pick that I'm surprised I hadn't made because I had to do a search all the way back to 2008. They said, we've never picked Flickr before, and I guess that's true. And for those of you that haven't heard of Flickr, it's spelled F-L-I-C-K-R. It's managed by Yahoo. Yahoo purchased them a while back. And it's basically an online photo storage and sharing site. And I put it here in my picks of the week because I use it, and I've signed up for the what they call the pro account. It's $24.95 a year. But what that allows you to do is upload as many photos as you like and store as many photos as you like online, both in their original file format or in the different varieties that they make available, down from very small sizes to all the way up to the top. And friends and family can come on and print those photos if you give them the ability to see those files. You can share them, you can organize them, put them in collections or sets. The pro account, which I think is well worth it, is ad-free. Also allows you to sync, and that's how I do it. I download all of my photos from my camera to my Mac Mini and into iPhoto, and then sync my iPhoto photos with Flickr, which immediately puts them online if I wanted to share them with friends and family that way. But it also acts as a backup, which was really my primary intent. So now I've got the stuff not just in my iPhoto library on my hard drive at home, but I have everything in their original format online and in a shareable fashion. So if something happens to my hard drive, I still have all my stuff on Flickr, and of course they back up the stuff as well. And then I've got it on my phone, because every phone has a Flickr app these days. I'm sure there's a Flickr app for the iPod Touch. It syncs with Roku boxes, so if you have a Roku, you can show you can do a slideshow right on your TV for family when they come over. It works with the Live Essentials suite. And then you can also hook up, if you're really nervous, Backupify, which is an online backup service. You can back up your Flickr photos to their service. So you've really got your photos now in three different places. And there's no replacing photos, as I think many of us have maybe learned the hard way. You always want those at least in a couple different places. And just storing them on an extra hard drive in your home probably isn't the only backup solution that you should have, since some bad things can happen to homes. In fact, my Mac Mini is down in the basement, so if we had any kind of flooding, that would be a problem. So that's why I've got it up in the cloud as well. And Flickr is a great service. You can tag photos with people. Again, put them in Make Sense collections and share them to your heart's content. So Flickr is a great service.
Okay, I have two comments for you on that pick, right, Martin. First up is, does listening to the Wealth Tech podcast cause you to be more nervous or neurotic or something like that? You know, the more you know, the
more you... Is that a question for me or for our listeners?
Yeah, that's a rhetorical one. Okay. But second of all, just another use for Flickr. One of my favorite ministry resources is Flickr, and I like to recommend it to people because you can make great slideshows with your Flickr sets and embed them on your church or school website. Yep. Really simple to do and very professional looking, and I've been really pleased with the results. So yeah, reason to use Flickr.
Yeah, for our Final Web users, I recommend that over the picture or photo gallery that's built into Final Web, which is a little clunky and I think harder to use. Plus, pictures take up your valuable storage. You can easily put them on Flickr, and then both you are... Like you mentioned, you can embed them on the website, but you can also share them with the world with a little bit broader audience there on Flickr as well, if you chose. So you can always lock it down if you like. So, and that's what we use for the images section on Wells.net. In fact, we put all of them in a collection on Flickr and then just embed the stuff as we want it.
Boy, great stuff. Thank you for that pick.
Oh, sure. I was shocked. I thought surely one of
where
us.
Where were we?
Yeah. Either me or you or Gail or somebody must have picked Flickr at some point in the past, but no. So here we are in 2011, and Flickr is our pick of the week. Let's move on to community.
Saving the good stuff.
Yes, that's right. Let's move on to community feedback.
You bet. All right. This week there was some conversation on the listserv about Google Apps. Pastor Steve Daly posed the question, you know, what are the pros and cons? How are you guys using it? That kind of thing. And he got some really thoughtful responses that I think if anybody is interested in Google Apps, maybe we'll capture these even on the Wells Tech Wiki, Martin, so that we have an archive there as well for people that are considering Google Apps. We heard from three different Wells Techers, Ken Becker, Nathan Erickson, and somebody named Luke. I didn't grab his last name. Sorry, Luke. Maybe you didn't sign your last name.
Not the Apostle Luke, I'm assuming, but another
no.
Luke. Okay.
Yeah. And Luke even referred to him as Gayft, G-A-Y-F-D, Google Apps for your domain, and linked to a Wikipedia article about Google Apps, and just has some really great feedback on good reasons to use Google Apps and ways that you can use it effectively. So he also looked, and several people commented on Windows Live SkyDrive as an option as well. So several options out there for that cloud-based solution for file sharing, storage, and other uses that Google Apps can perform. Google Apps is free for nonprofits and education. And one of Pastor Daly's questions was, should I get the nonprofit or the education version? And, you know, Martin, I don't think there's really a difference. You just want to get it for free and you have that functionality.
There is a little bit of a difference. I think there is a donations option for
nonprofits.
For nonprofits, right?
Okay.
And not for education. And there may be some different templates, I'm not sure. But I know I researched both of those, and I think that's what I found. I think for our church, we actually got the education one rather than the nonprofit one. But I don't think it makes a big difference.
Okay. Well, very good. So read up on Google Apps. There's some great knowledge being shared out on the Wells mm-hmm. Tech listserv.
For sure.
Next up, we heard from Michael Luce, who's in Granbury, Texas, and attends Abiding Faith in Fort Worth. And he gave us some feedback on our online worship live streaming page, which is part of our Wells Tech Wiki. And Michael says that he's used all the different congregations listed there to view Sunday services when he's not able to attend in his own congregation. And he really likes the ability to worship online and stay connected that way. And thanked us for supplying that list. He pointed out that our link to Christ Our Redeemer in Aurora, Colorado was a little bit off. So we've corrected that link mm-hmm. to point to their live services. And mm-hmm. we encourage you to check out the list and add your own if you're doing streaming of your worship services.
That's right. We do the best that we can to maintain that, but there really is no way other than us going through every week and clicking every link and making sure that it works. And sometimes we have no idea when new churches are coming online with services, too. So if you are aware of, or if your church is beginning to do that, make sure you get on the page, because as we heard from Michael, people do visit that and use it.
Yes, definitely. All right. Next up, we have some links that were shared via our Wells Tech group on Digo. And Digo is a link sharing website where you can bookmark web pages that are of interest to you. And if you share them with the group, then everyone in the group is able to benefit from the neat sites that you find.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just what Gail Potratz did this week. She linked to a page with a Bloom's Taxonomy Web 2.0 style. So it's kind of a pyramid look. It has all the different levels of Bloom's Taxonomy, starting with remembering, understanding, applying, analyzing, evaluating, and creating. And at each level of the taxonomy, it has different Web 2.0 tools that you can use in the classroom to help with that particular skill. So, for instance, under remembering, it has a link to a site I hadn't played with before called Carrot Sticks, which is a great little math site for early elementary students where they can count and add and subtract, multiply and divide using carrot sticks. So, a lot of fun, a really fun interactive website for remembering. Mm-hmm. And it goes on up the scale, and there's a lot of new ones on here that I have never tried before. So that's what's most exciting to me, is to find new applications to use in the classroom. And so you'll want to check out this Bloom's Taxonomy Web 2.0 style.
This is really a great resource. I thought I was mm-hmm. fairly well connected, but I would say half of the things on here I've never heard of.
Right. So. And they actually have a mashup of all the different logos from the different sites.
Right.
But if you mouse over, they're actually embedded links to each of the different sites. So you can go right from this image to the particular sites that you want to make use of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going to play with this for a while. You go ahead with the show, Sally.
All right, I'll keep going. Thanks, Martin. Next up, we heard from Sally Draper, and I shared a link on Digo to a page full of PDF ebooks from makeuseof.com, which is kind of an industry standard out there that they tell you how to do things or how to make use of things. And they have a full selection of ebooks, everything from how to use iTunes, Twitter, the Mac manual. They have the Internet Guide for the Movie Addict. They have a Smart Productivity Guide. They have Ubuntu guides. They have digital photography guides. The list goes on and on. Windows mobile phones, Windows guides, Dropbox guides, and on and on. I actually ended up on this page because I was reading about Inside and Out your PC. They actually divided it into two different guides. They have information about chassis, power supplies, and motherboards, and then they have a separate PDF document about CPU, RAM, storage, video cards, and expansion. And I have some budding PC enthusiast here who read these with great interest to learn more about the hardware that they're using. And so, but I was just really impressed with the many, many guides that were available here from Make Use Of. And in order to get access to them, when you click on any of the links, it does require you to make a free account on their website, but there's no fees or anything for any of these books. So if you're looking to learn something new, this might be a great place to start.
Cool.
Next up, Jason Schmidt from Yosemite in Omaha, Nebraska, tagged a page called Extreme Planet Makeover. And when you go there right away, your sound kicks in because it's got a cool groovy background music. It's for education, for kids to look at the effects of the distance from the sun, for instance, or the size of the planet, and how that might affect what the planet looks like and what kind of life it can sustain and that kind of thing. So just a fun science experiment kind of website. You might want to check that out. And last up, we heard from Martin via Digo, and you tagged a blog post from Lifehacker about backing up online.
Yeah, there was news, and maybe we could have put this in news and tech, the news and tech category, that a backup service that I've talked about in the past called Mozy was no longer going to be offering a free service, or not just free, but unlimited backup, so that they were going to tier their pricing, and it was not as appealing as it used to be. So what this article does is it says there are other alternatives, and I think most of these we've already recommended in the past, but it's worth a look to see, you know, what kind of cloud-based, and I mentioned the importance of cloud-based backups before, what kind of alternatives they have available. And the first one they reference is actually the one that I use called Backblaze, which has been a pick of mine in the past, which is basically $50 a year, unlimited storage. And the reason that I use it is that it will also back up any attached storage that you have. So if you have an external hard drive or whatever attached to your computer, a flash drive, thumb drive, it will also back up that content. Some of the others don't do that as nicely. So just a nice all-purpose article if you are concerned about backup, which I hope you are. Cloud-based backups are really something that should be considered these days.
Very good. Thanks for sharing, Martin.
And that should about do it for our community feedback. If you, too, would like to offer any insights, comments, questions, suggested topics, you have many, many ways to do that. First of all, you can visit our show notes website at wellstech.wells.net. Shoot us an email, wellstech@wells.net. And we would love to have a voicemail from you, 405 for Wells. That's 405-367-9357. Of course, we have a Facebook page. Digo Group was already mentioned. Many other ways to get in touch with us. So we would love your feedback. That's what makes this show what it is, in my opinion. It gives us guidance, direction, and we get to share more than certainly Sally or I could come up with in any given week. And that's what it's all about, finding good ministry resources to spread the gospel.
Very good.
Next week, you mentioned Chris Brogan earlier in the show, Sally. We've got a topic kind of devoted to that.
Yeah, actually, he wrote a recent blog about what to blog about, and we thought that might be a good idea to share some blogging ideas for those who are interested in a Christ-focused blog and how they might have ideas for what to write about there.
Yep, and associated with that, Pastor Dan Walters is going to join us for an interview about blogging.
About blogging. He's got a blog. It's called Pastor Walters Has a Blog, and he's been blogging faithfully there, and we're going to learn about his blogging experience and where his ideas and inspiration comes from.
Very good. So tune in next week for that. Let's close the show with the music of Kevin Lersch, the song Amazing Grace from the album Abide With Me. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
Amen. Grace will see.